Are you on a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles? Aren't we all? Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than 20 bucks a month. Whether you're shopping for the geek in your life or if you are that geek, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. Every month there's a different theme and new exclusive items you can only get with Loot Crate. Treat yourself every month or give the gift of geeking out to a friend or loved one. For April, join us as we salute some of our favorite mystery solvers with items from Stranger Things, Batman, The X-Files, and Marvel's Jessica Jones. One lucky subscriber will also win a mega crate, including signed copies of Jessica Jones, Alias, volumes 1 through 4. Pretty sweet stuff. I hope I am that lucky subscriber. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate. And when the cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. Make sure to head to www.lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter the code Shaw to save $3 off any new subscription today. Welcome back to the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. Hope everyone is having a good week. I'm your host, Arthur Arkish. I am counting down the days until the 2017 NFL Draft. Just 15 to go, and couldn't be happier that you have chosen to spend this one with us. I hope you will spend the final 14 as well, heading over to our website, profootballweekly.com. All kinds of new content going up there daily, whether it's video scouting reports or mock drafts or film reviews. We've got it all covered. I hope by now you have purchased your copy of the draft magazine, the PFW 2017 draft magazine. There's an updated version available as well. You can purchase both in a combo pack on our website. You can find them on the newsstands, and we'll be hearing from the author of this magazine, Greg Gabriel, momentarily. Looking forward to bringing that interview to you. But before I do, just a quick reminder to head over to iTunes and subscribe to the PFW podcast and leave us a review while you're there, and tell your family and friends. The more people that we have listening, the better, obviously, and we're not going to overbook. We're not reaccommodating anyone. There is room for you all. So thank you for finding us and continuing to do so. And let's have some fun now with Greg Gabriel, the author of the Pro Football Weekly Draft Magazine.
And up now on the Pro Football Weekly podcast is Greg Gabriel. He is the author of our draft magazine. He is the longtime NFL scout, and he's a frequent contributor to the podcast. Greg, thanks for being back on. What's going on?
Not much. Things going with you?
Everything is great. Thank you for asking. And, you know, it's getting exciting now. It's 15 days. By the time our listeners are hearing this podcast, we'll have only 15 short days until the draft finally commences. I know it feels like it's been forever. What's the...
If you're working inside an NFL office, it's 15 long days.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. And if you're us in the media, it probably can't go by quick enough because we've heard so much silliness at this point. Greg, is there one thing that seems sillier than all the rest, whether it's come from an analyst or maybe a team kind of throwing out some smoke screens? What's kind of just caught your eye as something that just looks absurd at this point?
You know, really, in all honesty, nothing. I haven't seen anything too far-fetched.
Okay.
The one thing, we go back a couple, yesterday, I guess, you know, the word gets out, there's a North Carolina coach tweets a picture of him and the Bills owner, Terry Pegula, and the new head coach, Sean McDermott, after they had done a workout, a private workout with Trubisky, mm-hmm. that... you know, a lot of people are saying, well, it's a smokescreen that the Bills went in there and worked this guy out. And thinking to myself, yeah, it's a smokescreen. That's why the owner went. And the owner went to the workout with DeShone Kizer the day before. Owners don't take part in the smokescreen part. That's mm-hmm. just, that's a little bit, they got better things to do.
Okay. So that means I think what I'm hearing is we can add the Bills to the growing list of teams that could legitimately be in the market for an early quarterback. Is that an accurate kind of thing to glean from this information?
Yeah, I think so. I had 10 teams before this happened, and really I should have had Buffalo in there when you look at their quarterback situation, but I had 10 teams with a need. Now, be it a player that's got to come in and play right away, or they have an older starter in the case of the Arizona Cardinals and the New York Giants, where you know, they have to draft a young guy to develop so that when the starter retires, you know, they've got a guy in the wings ready to go. And that's really the smart way to do it,
sure,
rather than having to force the situation.
And I think that's probably why you're hearing teams like the Giants and the Steelers, of course, also being mentioned in that talk. Eli Manning on the way down, Ben Roethlisberger, I thought it was the ultimate non-story this offseason, talk about him going back and forth about whether he wanted to play again. So one team, Greg, if I can, with all due respect, if I can add a team to your list, and you tell me if it doesn't belong. What about the Jaguars? They've been picking up a little bit of steam. Obviously, Tom Coughlin taking over. What do you think about the Blake Bortles dynamic there, and if Jacksonville could be looking early? Maybe not at number four, but at some point.
They could be. I think they're going to give that one more year. He's only been in the league 3 years. You know, going back 3 years ago when he came out, I was not a big fan.
Right.
I thought he was a legitimate first-round pick. I didn't think he was a top-five pick. And when you take a quarterback in the top five, and I think he went at three, you know, you're putting a lot of pressure on the player, and you're putting pressure on the front office. And I said at the time, if Bortles goes in the top five, that, you know, inside of 3 years, the head coach and or the general manager will be fired, because this player is not that type of player. He's not going to be a, quote, and I hate the term franchise quarterback, but he's not going to be a franchise type quarterback. He's, you know, he could be a decent starter in the league if he gets a good supporting cast around him. Well, you know, 3 years later, the GM's been demoted. He's got the title GM, but Tom Coughlin really is the GM. He's the decision maker, and the head coach is gone. And Bortles has not played anywhere up to the expectation of being drafted in that slot in the top five. And, you know, that can happen. You know, when they took him, they said the plan was for him to sit his whole rookie year and become the starter a second year. That lasted three games.
Mm-hmm.
And then, he, you know, he was put into a situation when he wasn't ready to play, he's forced to play, and all that does is really take away confidence from the player. He starts losing confidence in himself. The bad play ends up being a disruption to the whole team, and you know, Jacksonville has spent a ton of money in the offseason the last 3 years trying to get a supporting cast around him, and it hasn't come to fruition.
Yeah, Greg, it's interesting because, as you mentioned, Dave Caldwell has been demoted there. He still has GM title, but with Tom Coughlin calling the shots, there's no other way to construe that. And I find it kind of interesting. Actually, on Tuesday, the Jaguars released Dan Scuda. I believe he got something upwards of $10 million guaranteed two off seasons ago, along with Devon House and Julius Thomas. And it looks like that free agent spending spree is pretty much cleared out at this point. So I know we're going off on a little. I'm going off on a little bit of a Jaguars tangent here. So let me see if I can reel it back in. Greg, it's a fait accompli, I think, at this point that the Browns are going to take Myles Garrett number one. But it seems like it's there's a ton of different options as high as number two in the San Francisco 49ers. Do you remember other years where there seems to be such a kind of muddled field right after Garrett at the top?
Well, yeah, I mean, it has been like that. And one of the reasons is you've got some quality players with injury question marks. You've got teams with various needs, and there isn't a so-called top-of-the-line quarterback, at least in the eyes of the analysts,
right,
you know, many of the draft analysts, that is a lock to go in the top five or a lock to be the first pick in the draft. Like last year, you know, everybody had Jared Goff going first or second and Wentz being first or second, and that's how they came off the board. And so when that happens, everything gets jumbled and nobody knows what's going to happen. And I think the injury situation is playing into it. You got Jonathan Allen reported to have two arthritic shoulders from shoulder labrum surgery earlier in his career. Hasn't affected his play at all, but the question mark is there, and no team's going to come out and say, he passed our medical, he's good to go. You'll hear that after a team drafts him, but you're not going to hear it beforehand, because every team is going to have a little bit different medical report on the player. And the same thing with Malik Hooker, the safety from Ohio State. He had a sports hernia surgery and a hip labrum surgery. The hip labrum surgery is the one that would be worrisome to teams, because there's a lot of skill position players that just don't come back in quite the same form as before. They can play, but they just don't have quite that same form as they had before the injury. So unless the doctors write off on these guys and say, you know what, it was a good surgery, they're good to go, I think there are question marks as to where they fall in the draft. They could still be top five type players, or they might go between 5 and 10, or maybe go in the teens. And, you know, we'll find that out in another 15 days, what's going to happen with that. But that, and I think that muddies the waters, the quarterback situation, and that muddies the waters as to who's going to do what in that top 10. And to tell you the truth, I'm not a mock draft fan. I never have been, because there's going to be trades. It's just who is going to be the player that some team wants to trade up for. And we don't really know the answer to that. Or players. Does somebody want to jump up and grab one of the corners who they perceive to be the top corner? Maybe it's Lattimore from Ohio State. Does somebody want to jump up and take the top running back, Fournette from LSU? Does somebody want to jump up and take a quarterback? Maybe it's Deshaun Watson from Clemson. And I think the quarterbacks are grouped together. I think if you put all the decision makers from the different clubs in the same room and said, okay, give me your top four quarterbacks in order, you're going to get several different answers as to who those top four quarterbacks are. Now, in saying that, you know, I'm a firm believer that four going in the first round, in the worst case scenario, is four going by, say, number 38 or 40. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going high. And I think these guys are going to be, I think they're underrated in the draft, and I think they're going to be better players than people are anticipating. They just don't have that publicity clout that some of the guys in the past few years have had.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, Greg. Maybe it is kind of the polarizing sort of view of these quarterbacks that's kind of, at least through the media, dragging down the whole group a little bit, because I think underrated is the right word as well. I think depth is another good word with this quarterback group, but because there's the lack of an Andrew Luck or a Cam Newton or the lockdown number one overall pick, it seems like there's kind of been a bad rap on this position. I want to get back to safeties for a moment, Greg. Let's just pretend, and obviously you and I have no idea, but let's say that the majority of teams have a clean medical on Malik Hooker. They're not worried about the surgeries. What do you just think about the positional value this year with two studs and Hooker and Adams as a potential top five, top three type pick? Again, assuming the medical is clear, Jamal Adams, I think, lowered some concerns that maybe you had with that pro day 40 time. What do you think about just that position, though, and elite prospects at the position going that high potentially?
Well, I think that given a clean bill of health that Malik Hooker has special to him, and to take a safety inside the top five, let alone the top three, he has to have special, and not only be a special athlete, but a special player. And what he has shown on tape, yes, he could be a little bit more physical as far as being a tackler, but mm-hmm. the ball skills, the range, the instincts and coverage that he has, those are rare. And when you see the plays that he makes on the ball all over the field, from the center field, going to the sideline or whatever, you know, that's rare. And you know, I think he could be a dynamic free safety in the NFL. And again, I just keep saying, if he's given a clean bill of health.
Right.
I'm not as high on Adams. You know, I think if you take Adams at 10, 11, 12, maybe 8 or 9 in that area, that's fine. I think being in the top five, even with the better 40 time, is too high for him. Very good player, not a special player. And the thing that scares me a little bit, and I'm putting my old director of scouting hat on, mm-hmm. is that, you know, you look at the analytics of it, all the numbers, and not just the 40 speed. And granted, he ran, now some of these times that you were hearing last week that he ran the 4.33 and the 4.38, throw those out the window. It was 4.45 by the majority of NFL scouts there. Maybe I think the best time I've heard is 4.44, but it's in that mid 4.4 range. Very good time, and he plays on tape. You know, I had estimated for our magazine that, you know, he's about a 4.48 player was his play speed. But, you know, you go back to the combine, and his vertical jump was 31.5. That's not average. That's way below average for a player at his position. When he had his pro day last week, he ran 1.40. got that one out of the way real quick, you know, with fresh legs. Wouldn't do any of the jumps, wouldn't do any of the agility drills. 140, that's it. To me, that's a little bit of a red flag. And because, you know, over the years, you learn that the jumps and the speed have a correlation. And a lot of it has to do with explosiveness in the player. And you could, you know, go back through the years and look at players that might have a good timed 40 speed. And I could use a Bears player from last year that they took late, Braverman, the wide receiver from Western Michigan. He ran 4.47, but his vertical jump was 29.5 inches. And he, when you see him on the field, he plays more like a 4.65 or a 4.7 guy because he doesn't have that lower body explosion. Well, a 31.5 vertical for a safety in the NFL is a poor number. If it's up around 35, 36, that's more like the average than a 31.5. And having not seen him redo the jumps, and somebody asked him to do it, and he goes, no, I can't jump good. Well, to me, that says part of that speed is manufactured. And so, you know, I would hesitate in taking him in the top five. Wouldn't feel bad about it because I know what kind of player he is at 10 or around in that area, but right. I just don't see the special in him to go that high.
Okay, that's interesting. So it's like you want to validate the film study with those testing numbers if you're drafting them that high, and that makes sense. Let's just stick with the safety position for one more minute, Greg. Not necessarily specific names, but just do we have to throw out kind of what we've known in the past about the way that position is valued? And I'll throw tight ends, too. And maybe I'm going off on too many tangents here, but we're 1 year removed, Greg, from really bad safety and tight end crops, and now it looks like they're both really special. And it's a matchup league in the NFL. I mean, are NFL coaches just drooling over these positions? And how rare is it to get these two positions specifically with the way that the game is changing in the year 2017 and the strength of these positions?
Well, obviously, let's talk safety first. There's obviously depth of the position, you know, more than those top two that we talked about. There's Jabril Peppers and Jabril Peppers. We could, you know, spend a half hour on that conversation right. alone, because people in the league are all over the board. And there's people that I respect that really love him and think he's going to be a hell of a pro. And there's other people that I have that same respect for that think, you can have him, I don't want him. You know, he's just a figment of your imagination. So, and I'm more of the thinking that this guy's going to be a pretty good pro, and I know what they tried to do with him in Michigan. They wanted to get him closer to the line of scrimmage because he was a playmaker, and there's, you know, the people who are on the other side of that discussion thinking, well, no, they did that because he can't play in coverage. Well, that's false. You know, look at the 2015 tape when he was playing corner. The guy can cover, and he's got rare return skills. But, you know, that argument's going to play out all the way till draft day. In fact, I read earlier today that some guy put out that the team that really loves him, and then you have to obviously look at it sideways, is Kevin Colbert and the Pittsburgh Steelers. But I, you know, I've known Kevin as long as I've been in the league, and Kevin's not going to be one to go out and tell the media who he likes and who he doesn't like. So, you know, again, we'll find out draft day how that plays out. But when you look at the position as a whole, and you got guys like Marcus Williams from Utah, Buda Baker was a little bit undersized, but a real good player, Justin Evans from Texas A&M, Obi Melanfanwu, who is a workout warrior. Tape looks like a third round pick, but his workout is rare. He's a first round pick with his workout. I think he goes at the bottom of the first or top of the second round. And when you have traits like that, you know, there's going to be coaches that are going to be lining up to say, give him to me, I'm going to turn him into a player. So yeah, the class is deep. And it depends on the scheme the teams are playing. If they're asking their safeties to play man coverage, some of these guys can play man coverage. Adams could play man coverage. Hooker, I have no doubt, can play Madden coverage. Peppers has a history of playing Madden coverage from the 2015 season. There's a lot of people that think Melanfanwu can play corner because of his length and his athleticism. So, yeah, it's an interesting class. Some of them might get overdrafted, but I'm really looking forward to seeing how they fall on day one and day two of the draft in 2 weeks.
And in my drawing a proper parallel between the tight ends and the safeties, Greg, in the way the coaches are looking for these guys that can both create mismatches and then the safeties that can kind of counter that. And if so, let's kind of segue into the tight ends and just kind of how you view it. It looks like there's going to be some day two and day three, even potential stars. I mean, I look at someone like a Gerald Everett, and I think he's got all kinds of star quality, and he may be around maybe early in round three even. Is that right?
Well, yeah, it could be, but the you look at the tight end position, and for lack of a better word, it's a bastard position, and that you're depending on the scheme.
Mm-hmm.
He can be a big wide receiver who's sure. always playing split out. He can be a move tight end. He can be the old-fashioned wide tight end and have to play in tight and block. And there's a lot of these guys that can't do the last thing I said, the Y position. Now, the guy who comes to mind first that can is going to be the first tight end off the board, O.J. Howard. He's a mixture of the two in that he's big enough and strong enough and has the skill set to be able to block if you want to play him in tight, and he's got the athleticism to play as a move guy and either be flexed out in the slot or even out wide and try to create mismatches with smaller guys. And then you look at a lot of the top guys in the tight end class, Evan Engram, you know, more wide receiver than tight end. He gives you real good effort as a blocker, but he's not going to be more than a shadow blocker and stalk a guy. He's not going to be able to knock a guy off the line of scrimmage. He doesn't have the bulk or the strength to do that. The same with David Njoku. Good effort, just doesn't have that girth and power to be that blocker. So these guys are going to be move tight ends and split out and try to create mismatches. So are they really tight ends or are they big wide receivers? Then you get a guy, now, you know, questionable if he can play this year, Jake Butt. He can stay in and block. Jeremy Sprinkle from Arkansas, he can line up at that wide position, and he's athletic enough to be split out. So it's not only a deep class, it's an interesting class because there's a lot of different skill sets among the players.
And let me, I don't know if this is asking you to put on a coaching hat instead of a scouting hat. I don't think it is, Greg, but how do scouts kind of project and say a guy didn't do it in college, but he's going to have a chance to be a Rob Gronkowski or a Jason Witten type in the NFL where he can play the Y, he can do everything and be a plus both in the run game and in pass protection in addition to, you know, as a receiver?
Well, you can't guess in scouting. You got to be more absolute. You can say, I think he can, based on what I saw on tape, but you really got to go back to the tape. What's the tape tell you? And unfortunately for the NFL is that in a lot of these spread offenses, you don't see the tight end playing in tight. You know, it's the old-fashioned tight end. Now, at Alabama, you do. At Arkansas, you did a little bit with Sprinkle, but then with some of these guys, you do. But for the most part, they're flexed out, and so that's what you see them doing. And but now you got to go when you want to see if they can block. The first thing you're looking for is effort, or I call it want to. And mm-hmm. does he have that want to get tangled up with big guys and win that battle at the line of scrimmage? If they have the want to, and they have the body frame that you can put on bulk and strength, then I don't think it's a big problem. But there are some guys in this draft that they want no part of blocking, you know, part of, and they are so-called tight ends. And these guys, because of their athleticism and their speed, they still may go fairly high, but you're never going to see them used in tight. You're always going to be seeing them, you know, as the flexed out move type guy.
Hey, Greg, we've worked together closely throughout this draft process, and maybe I'm reading your mind correctly, and maybe I'm not, but why don't you tell the listeners what you think of Bucky Hodges from Virginia Tech, where we're talking
he's
about want to.
About.
but he's going to go high, right?
He wants no part of that dirty work. You know, he's a wide receiver in a tight end's body.
Right, and we've got a third-round grade on Bucky Hodges, 6'6", 257, one of those athletic marvels, but we'll see. It sounds like he's going to need the right coaching, and he's going to need a real fire lit under him, and it sounds like Greg has his doubts about that. Hey, I want to go through some quick pro day performances, and I'll just try and throw a name or two out there. You tell me what you think. I know you're a Dante Foreman fan, the Texas Punisher in the backfield, really good running back, number 5 on our board. Had a medical condition at the combine. I believe it was a stress fracture in his foot, yet bounced back just a few weeks later to blaze a really impressive 40 for someone at his size. Is that right? Tell us a little bit more about Dante Foreman.
Yeah, but I think anytime you get a foot problem with a running back or a wide receiver, that's a red flag. It's cause for concern, and now it becomes a medical question on draft day. And I'm sure they did CAT scans and X-rays and MRIs on that foot to see exactly what the situation is. Is it going to be the type of thing where he's going to, you know, get a quarter of the way through training camp or three games into the season and he's going to have a broken foot and be done for the rest of the year? And you're going to be able to see that, I think, with the X-rays and MRIs, and then the doctors will make a decision. They'll go thumbs up and thumbs down. So now he becomes, in my mind, as good as he is, a little bit of a wild card. And again, you know, the teams are going to look at it differently. Some teams are going to say he's good to go. Other teams are going to have the red flag and say, you know, we like him, but we're not going to take him at the grade we have. We might have a high second round grade on him, but we'll take him in the fourth round because of the foot problem, because they don't want to deal with based on what their needs are going into camp and what they got to get out of the draft. They don't want to have to deal with an injured player who's a high-round pick. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen in a situation like that, but I really like the player on tape. I think the first time I put tape on him, you know, the later part of the fall, I mean, it was like, wow, this guy's big time, especially running between the tackles. And I think that's the difference when you're studying running backs, is can they run inside? Because in the NFL, you know, in college you get holes that are, you know, as wide as a door, you know, a double door. And it's easy for the back to get through it if he's got some blocking, he's got some vision. In the NFL, those holes aren't that wide. They're a foot wide. He's got to be able to create. He's got to be able to move the pile. And the guys that can run tough inside, those are the guys that end up being productive NFL players.
And, Greg, I know you're a big fan of Raekwon McMillan from Ohio State. I think we're a little bit higher on him, or you're a little bit higher on him than some other outlets. A question about another off-the-ball linebacker, though, who I think helped himself in the postseason portion of the draft lead-up. What about Jared Davis out of Florida? Where do you kind of slot him? I know he's been getting a lot of pubs since having some pretty impressive testing numbers down at the Gainesville Pro Day.
Well, he missed the last part of the season.
Right.
You know, with an injury. So now, again, you know, you don't have the numbers until he was able to work out, and that was just a couple of weeks ago. He ran really well. His overall workout was really good. I had, and actually I think we went to press with our update.
Right before the Florida Pro Day. I think it was right before the Florida Pro Day, right?
Right. And you know, I had a low one to a high two grade on him based on not having all the answers to the questions. Mm-hmm. And now I think he's answered those questions. He's going to be a solid one, probably a guy that's going to go, you know, anywhere from as high as, say, 18 to as low as 30. But he's going to – I think he's definitely going to go in that second half of the first round type player. And I think, you know, as far as just looking at the pure linebackers, I think Foster is going to be an easy first. Raekwon McMillan's going to be a first. Davis is going to be a first. Hassan Riddick, I really grading more as a linebacker than as an edge rusher, and I think he could has a chance of being a first. So that, you know, that's four players at the linebacker position that can go. I'm not quite as high on Zach Cunningham as other people are. His tape is very good. Not a very big guy. He's got a very lean, narrow frame. He didn't test as good as I was hoping he would test. I think he's more of a two than a one. I think he's going to be a good player. It's just I think he's got to be in the right scheme because of his body frame.
Okay, interesting stuff. We're chatting with Greg Gabriel. Just another minute or two, because I'm already taking too much of his time. And don't worry, guys, I promise I'm going to bring back Greg next week and hopefully the final week before the draft. So there will be more time to get his insight. But I guess I want to circle back to the running back position and just end here, because you said you haven't seen a ton of smoke screens yet. I saw one, I think, this week on Tuesday, and it's from an analyst who I really like, Tony Pauline or Tony Pauline. I don't know how you say the name, but I really like
Pauline,
his work.
Pauline, I think it is, isn't it?
Thank you. I'm not sure, but I really do respect his work. And at the same time, I saw an interesting Roto World blurb about the 49ers are very serious about Leonard Fournette, possibly with the second overall pick. I see that, and I think, well, look at what the Falcons just did. Kyle Shanahan just did with a couple of mid-rounders. Look at all the 49ers holes. I'm not buying that for a second. But just on a greater kind of, just from a wider lens, How are teams going to kind of weigh these special running backs at the top versus the depth throughout? And is there a day two? Who's this year's Jordan Howard after you kind of answer that? Because Zeke Elliott and Jordan Howard, I think, went 1-2 in the NFL last year in rushing yardage, and they were about 145 picks apart or thereabouts.
Well, number one, I had Jordan Howard as the third best back in last year's draft.
Yes, so, you did. Pro Football Weekly Draft Magazine.
I'll say that the rest of the league was wrong and I was right.
I love it.
This is as good a running back class as I can remember, and I've been doing this since 1981. As far as the depth, I mean, could Fournette be a superstar? Yeah, he could be. He's got the talent to be. There's something missing, and I think it's, you know, from the neck up that may prevent him from being quite as good as he can be. I think he, you know, had a half-assed go at it in his last season at LSU, and that's why he wasn't in the bowl game. That was a school decision, not his decision. It was, you know, the coach said, you're out of here. And so I just hope that doesn't carry over into his career in the NFL, because he is a very, very talented guy.
Right.
But the class is, as a whole, when you look at guys, now another, just to go offbeat on this a little bit, I think a little guy who's a little bit overrated, I think he's a solid second round pick talent wise, but he might not be the best pure running back in a school, is Mixon. I think his teammate, Sam Ejepurine, is actually a better ball carrier, not all-around back, but okay, a better ball carrier than Mixon is. But when you throw in the total part of the total package of a running back being a receiver and being able to flex out and catch the ball coming out of the backfield, that gives Mixon the edge. He's faster, he's shiftier, he's more elusive. But that guy who can really move the chains and is going to win a lot of games for an NFL team on a Sunday is Sam Ejepurine. But, you know, I think there's going to be three running backs going this first round easy, and that's going to be the first three on everybody's board: Fournette, McCaffrey, and Dalvin Cook would be the third.
Well, and since we're throwing out compliments, I want to make sure to do it as well. You have been higher on Christian McCaffrey, Greg, than most, dating back to the middle of the college football season. And now I'm hearing talk about McCaffrey possibly in the top 10 or just outside the top 10. So it is interesting, though, with McCaffrey, you wonder if he can do it on every down, if he's going to hold up with the wear and tear. With Dalvin Cook, and you tell me if I'm wrong, are there some questions in between the ears with Cook or some off-field stuff, too? It just seems like these top three, as talented as they are, maybe none of them are absolute slam dunks.
Well, Cook has had, you know, some shoulder issues, and that's always a red flag at the running back position. And now I'm going brain dead on the player I want to compare him to. Former Clemson running back, Buffalo took with like the seventh pick about 8 years
CJ
ago.
Spiller.
Yes.
CJ Spiller. Yep.
That's the guy Cook reminds me of. And C.J. Spiller was a great college running back and a very average pro running back. And you could say the same thing about, you know, Reggie Bush. Great college player, average pro. And part of it is that lower body explosion. They have the speed, but their bodies wore down. And I think that could happen with Dalvin Cook. It's not going to take away from where he's going to get drafted, because he's a big play guy, and I think he's going to get drafted high, but I just don't see him having that long career, and he's going to break down earlier. Now, going back to McCaffrey, different type of player, and he's going to be used in an entirely different way. Actually, I think he's a little bit thicker than Cook is in the lower body, but, you know, he's almost a hybrid player. He's part receiver, part slot receiver, part running back, and a great returner. So I think a team is going to play him in a rotation. They're going to get him 22, 23 touches a game, but it's not going to be all as a ball carrier. It's going to be as a receiver, a returner, and a ball carrier. And I think if you do that properly, then his touches are going to turn into big-time touches because of the way he's going to be used and used as a mismatch in some situations, that he's going to have a huge career. But if you just stick him back there and try to give him the ball as a running back 25, 27 times a game, I think he's going to wear down. He just doesn't have that size that can hold up in the NFL game. I mean, you go back and the year we took Sed Benson in Chicago, three running backs went in the top five of that draft, and one of them, Cadillac Williams from Auburn, I think he was the fifth pick to Tampa Bay. You know, he really had about a year to a year and a half of decent production in the NFL, and that was it. I remember I had my report. I said, if you get 4 years out of this guy, it's a bonus, because mm-hmm. he was a guy that on the scale weighed 214 pounds, but he had a 185-pound body. And, you know, you could see that with some of these guys in this year's draft, too, at the running back position. If they don't have that lower body girth and power that guys like Jordan Howard have and Zeke Elliott had last year, they're just not going to hold up in the NFL.
Yeah, and I seem to recall, I think the Bucs rode him into the ground pretty early, too. Didn't necessarily do him any favors. Greg, we went way over, but I'm sorry. This is too good of a running back talk. My last question for you. We've got two day three guys who I love. They're home run hitters. You got Alvin Kamara from Tennessee and Marlon Mack from South Florida. Just stud, explosive running backs. They both have, I think, at least minor ball security issues. As a scout, how do you know? Is that always something that's correctable with the right coaching? Are there guys who just never figure it out, where you worry about the fumbling coming out, and that maybe lowers them a little bit?
Well, going back to earlier in my career, and this goes back to, I think it was 1990, mm-hmm. and when I was with the Giants, Parcells was the head coach, and we brought in O.J. Anderson, who was with the Cardinals, and great production, but he had ball security problems. And I remember sitting in a room with Parcells, and he was telling the story. So this O.J. came in. He said, he told him right off the bat, he said, you fumble the ball once and you'll never see the ball again. Fumbling is a mental problem. It is mm-hmm. not a physical problem. And he said, if you concentrate on not fumbling the ball, you will not fumble the ball. O.J. never fumbled the ball when he was with the Giants. And again, I think it's a correctable problem that players have, and it's a confidence thing, and it's a mental thing, concentration thing, that you have to secure and protect the football. So yeah, I say on tape you see the problem with fumbling with Mac, but he's also very, very explosive, big play guy. I'm yep. not as high on Kamara as other people are. There's people that had him in the first round a few weeks ago. You know, they're starting to settle down on that. I see a guy that is strictly a space player. And when you get him in space, he's got some special to him. He can make people miss. He's got the speed to hit the home run. The problem is the NFL isn't a space game. And at the running back position, you've got to create and you've got to make your own holes. You know, to me, he plays small. You know, he plays like that 185-pound back. He can't create or move people or break tackles between the tackles, but you get him out on the perimeter, he's going to do things. You use him as a receiver and flex him out or put him in the slot. I think he can do some things there, but as a ball carrier, I think he's very, very limited.
All right, terrific stuff. Great discussion on the running backs group, one of the strongest groups in this draft, but there are several. It's a loaded draft. There's going to be a lot more fun discussion in the final weeks at ProFootballWeekly.com. This is the wonderful author of our 2017 draft magazine, Greg Gabriel, longtime NFL scout. I know how busy you are, and I know how far I went over the allotted time, so thank you so much for being generous with your time, and can't wait to have you back on the program next week, Greg.
Sounds good.
That is Greg Gabriel, once again, the author of the 2017 Pro Football Weekly Draft Magazine.
All right. Once again, big thank you to Greg Gabriel. Fun stuff from him. And I'm pretty sure that neither one of us said anything that we're going to have to issue two or three clarifications on later in the day. So we'll consider that a success. And guys, just one more reminder to head over to iTunes if you haven't done so already to subscribe to the PFW podcast, the best way to make sure you never miss an episode. You're not going to want to miss any of the final few over the next 2 weeks before the draft. We'll have Greg back. We'll have other surprises in store for you. If you want questions answered on the PFW podcast, and I'll send out some tweets next week to remind you all, but I'd love to see if we can get Greg to answer some of your questions for next week's podcast. So shoot them over to the Pro Football Weekly Twitter handle. You can shoot them over to me at Arthur Arkish. I'm not going to tell you to shoot them to Greg because I know he's busy enough. We'll handle all the questions and we'll handle all the answers. Guys, thank you once again. We can't do this without you. A thank you to our great sponsor, Loot Crate. Thank thank you to Greg Gabriel, and we'll look forward to talking to you again next week on the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. Have a great day.